Whether you drive a car,
need a car,
or just occasionally bum a ride with friends,
you've come to the right place.
Join Jill and Tom as they break down everything that's going on in the auto world.
New car reviews,
shopping tips,
driving green,
electric cars,
classic cars,
and plenty of great guests.
This is the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast.
All right, this is the Car Stuff Podcast. I am Tom Appel. Thanks for joining us today. When you get a chance, you know the drill. Check us out at consumerguide.com. While you're there, check out our Best Buy Picks perfect list if you are looking for a new car or truck. That's where your test drive list begins. Also, you can listen to back episodes of the podcast right there on our homepage, though it might be cooler if you just subscribed. Just easier. All right, in studio, 3 weeks in a row.
Yeah,
Jill Simonello. Hi. She is managing editor of Pickup Truck Plus SUV Talk, North American Car of the Year juror, prolific freelancer.
Yes.
And you're wearing something. I can see your shoulders.
You can see my shoulders.
It's warm here.
It is warm here. It's like nice. 70 degrees.
It's
nice. Very nice.
There are people golfing, I bet.
I don't know why my husband is not golfing. I was going to say, if they are not golfing, I do not know why. And I'm not a golfer.
I don't golf. I don't know anything about golf. But it would seem to me like a little complicated to like call in people to like open the course at short notice.
Most courses are open year-round.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh.
Because there are people who actually like golf when it's cold outside.
We are surrounded right here by golf courses.
Yeah.
A lot of them right here.
Yep.
All right. How are you?
I'm doing very well. How are
we
you?
We have. I'm good. Thank you. We have a birthday in the Car Stuff Podcast family.
Okay.
Brendan Appel.
Okay.
Turned 63 today.
Well, that's not nice of you to share his age.
I
that's
got
very
that
from, indelicate of you.
That might not be right.
Okay.
It might
I was like,
be.
That would be very indelicate.
I'm darn sure it's his birthday. I don't know that he's 63.
And he looks really good if he is 63. I'm just
right?
going to put that out there.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so good for him.
Yeah.
And he might be joining us next week. I haven't.
Yes.
This will be a shock to him when he hears this.
Somebody's going to be joining you next week because I will not be here.
You will not be here.
I will be driving the Ford Ranger.
Oh, finally.
Yes.
Finally.
Yes.
Not finally that you're driving it. Finally
just
that anyone.
Finally that anybody is driving it. Yes.
Yeah. That seems to be just a lot of stuff out there. We haven't. Well, we talked about this last week.
Yeah.
We're waiting on a lot of trucks.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of them.
A lot.
Oh, man. Busy day.
Yes.
We got a lot to talk about, but let's get to one thing really interesting first. Fisker.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
Fisker, the brainchild of Henrik Fisker, a man
yes.
who I've interviewed. I like him a lot, and I've always wanted him to be a success.
Yeah.
Not really happening yet.
Mm-mm.
But Fisker Automotive
mm-hmm.
does exist. They're
they
building
do.
Cars.
They are.
They're building the Fisker Ocean.
Yes.
A compact
which is an
crossover.
SUV.
Yep.
Yep.
Compact crossover. They're going to be building the Pear. And I always forget what the PEAR stands for. It is Personal Electric Automotive Revolution. So I think that's PEAR all caps.
Okay. That's going to be annoying.
Yeah. And I think that's smaller and supposed to be cheaper. But I think they can't worry about cheaper right now because they have financial issues.
They do, in fact, have financial issues.
And the issue is they don't have any money.
No. No. Well, you know, and so like a little bit of background. This Fisker has kind of been around for a little bit, but they were something else. Remember the, was it the Karma?
The Karma came
yeah.
out in 2011. And there's some question as to whether the Volt or the Karma. Both plug-in, extended-range plug-in hybrids, which came first.
Yeah.
So that's how far back Fisker making consumer products goes.
Yeah. And like, in recent history, like, Fisker and Karma kind of split, and then
yep.
Karma became its own automaker, and then Fisker went a different direction. And so there's been some stuff that has kind of happened, and now they have no money.
Yeah. Fisker Fisker became a separate company, and the Karma, or the company became Karma.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and the car became the Rivero.
Yes.
But that's still the old Fisker Karma.
Yes.
Very confusing.
Yeah.
But you want to root for this guy because he's not crazy. His designs are interesting.
Mm-hmm.
He believes in sustainability.
Yeah.
He's a good guy all around, but needs some money. So
yeah.
Nissan.
Yes.
This is interesting.
Yeah.
Do you know the story?
A little bit.
Talk the story.
Yeah. So, I mean, you can fill in the blanks. I'm just going to give some broad sweeps here. But the short of it is Nissan and Fisker are going to, you know, potentially Nissan is going to give them money. And then they are going to collaborate on a midsize pickup truck that's electric. Because Fisker last year revealed the Alaska.
The Alaska. Which is a great name for a truck.
You know
how
what
has
it
that
is?
Not happened? Yeah.
That exactly. Fisker Alaska. And again, midsize pickup truck, and they just haven't had the money to build it. Well, last year at about this time, Nissan started showing, and this is through my lens here, Nissan started showing pictures of a heritage vehicle and talking about electric trucks and all this kind of thing. So I actually wrote a story about a year ago wondering if Nissan was going to build a midsize electric pickup truck. And here we are a year later. They're in this collaboration, and the idea being that, you know, they would use the plans from Fisker to build the Alaska and then create its own midsize electric pickup truck. They might build it possibly on the same assembly line. And all of this is coming from a story written by Reuters from a couple of inside sources.
Yeah, super interesting story. And we'd love to see the Alaska get built. And if it can get built, because Nissan spends, the rumored number is $500 million, to help Fisker along and to finish developing the Alaska architecture, well, that's all the better.
Yeah.
The interesting thing about Fisker, and it hasn't saved them apparently, but they're into manufacturing light. Do you remember that term?
No.
Yeah, it's capital light, manufacturing light, but they don't build their own vehicles.
Okay.
So automotive supplier Magna, huge company.
Okay.
Used to be Magna Steyr, headquartered in Canada, but they're international. They build the Fisker Ocean in a plant in Austria, I believe.
Okay.
So someone else is building this. So Fisker never ponied up for a factory.
Right.
They're just paying for manufacturing. And that's that's something that a lot of manufacturers are looking at now, because building a car plant, whenever we hear about one going up, it's $3, $4, $5 billion.
Yeah.
Bunch of money. So good luck to Fisker. I'd like to see this work. Nissan could use an electric pickup.
Yep.
Speaking of Nissan, did you see the Ariya price cuts?
I did not.
Today, yeah. Just this news just popped up. Nissan is cutting prices 8 to 10% on the Ariya.
Interesting.
So if you haven't been buying an electric car because you think they're expensive, everyone is cutting prices on electric cars.
Now is the time.
This might be the time to strike.
Yeah. Well, you know, and I'd say the Ariya is probably one of the best EVs I've driven. The design to the interior fit and finish to the range, I feel like that was the first electric vehicle that I was able to drive all the way to Indianapolis without having to stop to charge.
Yeah, nice car.
Yeah, so it's 200 miles.
It's one of the best, I think, interpretations of a conventional vehicle into an electric vehicle.
Yeah.
Because the Nissan Rogue is a really good vehicle. Mm-hmm. And though this is completely different technically, it kind of the same experience.
Yeah.
Just really good compact crossover.
Yeah, I agree. I really liked it. They did a good job.
So more electric car news.
Yes.
Tesla and Ford.
Okay.
We knew about this.
Yes.
But now it's happening.
It's happening! Yes, it is.
You can now charge your Ford Mustang Mach-E and your Ford F-150 Lightning at Tesla supercharger stations.
Yes.
And it doesn't seem like there's any limitations. And it also seems like your current software and apps will work. And the guys at EV Pulse.
Okay.
They tried it.
Mm-hmm.
And you can watch the video. Maybe I'll even link to their video, even though they're the enemy.
They're not different the enemy. Outlet.
But they did Craig Cole did a really great video.
Yeah.
And they got it to work.
Yeah.
So there's only two things you got to do. One, you have to wait for your vehicle to be software updated.
Mm-hmm.
And I think your car will tell you if it has been software updated for this. And then you need the adapter.
Right.
The North American Charging Standard.
NACS.
NACS, which is the Tesla standard, which is now going to become the global standard.
Well, not global, just
US.
The United States.
Yeah.
Because Europe still uses CCS, and I don't think they're changing.
Probably not. They might.
Mm.
Doesn't matter much if there's an adapter.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and so Ford was the first automaker really to say that they were going to make this switch and have an adapter. And then pretty quickly, most of the other automakers have kind of followed suit. So Ford is just the first automaker that we've seen that is able to take advantage of that. And, you know, I find this all very interesting, because there is certainly software stuff that has to happen in addition to, you know, the plug thing that has
and
to happen.
If you're going to be nervous about something, it's the software stuff happening.
Yeah, because here's the thing. So Rivian is CCS. They have built their own, like, they're starting to build their own charging network, similar to what Tesla did. But that is not CCS like as CCS is. So, like, if you're driving along the road and you see a Rivian charger and you have a Volvo, you cannot go to that Rivian charger and charge up because the software is different.
Yeah. Also, Rivian probably had no business developing their own charging network. they're too small and they have too many problems.
Well, they're too small.
It's going to be too limited.
Yeah,
and you're not going to be able to help that many customers doing that.
No, and you're limiting, like, you're not helping other electric, like, if one electric, so I firmly believe that we can all play in the same sandbox, and if one person or electric charging manufacturer or whatever is successful, then that lifts everybody else up. So by doing something that's exclusive, you're not only hurting yourself, you're hurting everybody else at the same time.
Yeah, and like Mercedes is building out its own network, and they're big enough to make that work to some extent. And anyone can charge at a Mercedes-Benz charger. You're just not going to get preferential treatment if you're making a reservation to hold a spot.
Right.
Is basically
Wait,
how
you
that's
can make a
work.
Reservation to hold a spot?
You can, not for very long.
That would be awesome. Like, that is one of the biggest problems, I think, with the infrastructure right now. Is so, like, I'll be sitting at home, I'll look at my app, and I'll be like, ooh, Electrify America has a spot open. You take 10 minutes and drive over there, and
we should look into how that works, because I don't know how long they'll hold a reservation for you. But in the case of Tesla, and we had that situation with the cold weather meltdown a few weeks ago, one of the things about that was that once you make a reservation, the battery starts to precondition. So it's getting ready for you to charge. So your car knows it's going to be charged,
right,
and it can start warming the battery. So that's that story. Ford, a lot of other manufacturers are going to follow, including General Motors.
Yeah.
But for Ford owners, this more than doubled the opportunities to charge and probably more than quadrupled the odds of getting to a station that works.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I almost want to get a Mustang Mach-E or something like that. And I know there's now a Tesla charging station in Fair Oaks, Indiana, which is about an hour and a half from Chicago south. I would like to go there and charge.
Oh, the adapter. We have to talk about the adapter.
Yes.
If you own a Mach-E, if you own a Lightning, F-150 Lightning, you can get one adapter for free. You have to apply online. But if you own the vehicle, the adapter's free. Additional adapters are a little expensive. They're $230.
Yeah, but if you own a $70,000 vehicle.
What's the big deal?
$230 is not that much.
You might want to get a second one just in case.
Yeah.
Who knows?
I would agree with that.
So that's that story. That's good news, I think. This might be an EV good news year.
I think it will be. And I'm going to be very curious to see how the influx of other customers being able to use Tesla chargers, you know, affects the Tesla charging experience, because so far all the Teslarati folks are like, I never have to wait. Everything is awesome. The chargers always work. And so I'll be curious if that changes with more people charging.
Tesla is still building out its charging network. Mm-hmm. So theoretically, there will be a huge influx of chargers now, of new chargers. But as their network expands, hopefully that's good news for everybody.
Yeah, fingers crossed.
So also Tesla, as we mentioned earlier, not going to have a great year sales rise, right? There's now competition. And not all the Teslas qualify for the federal tax credit. And Tesla's just not making the kind of money it was before. So this is a brand new revenue channel for Tesla. So it's very cool. All right, we're behind schedule here, but we had planned...
Yes.
By the way, you and I didn't talk to each other like for a minute before we started.
No.
We both were busy today.
Yes.
But we were going to... Oh, that's the quiz. You don't get to see
that
yet.
What?
Yeah. No, no, no. No quiz.
That's okay. I can't read your writing anyway.
You recently drove... No, I can't read my writing. You recently drove the Honda Passport Trail Sport.
I did.
Trail Sport's very interesting, and it's very interesting on the Passport. The Passport is a two-row...
Yep.
Crossover.
I mistakenly called it the Pilot last week.
Yep.
It is the Passport.
Which we discovered in the parking lot.
Yeah, I was like, oh.
Also, and that's why you should not drink during the show.
Clearly not. Or have donuts, maybe. I don't know. Too much sugar.
But the interesting thing about the Passport to even start with is it's kind of off-roady.
It is. It is. And, you know, they actually had the Passport and then the Passport Trail Sport compete in Rebel. So for those who've listened to us for a while, they know that I do this off-road navigation competition every October, and it's the Rebel Rally. It's women's only, and it's through challenging.
And again, great place to pick up a chick.
Yeah, yeah. If you want to volunteer there, yes. You cannot compete.
That's
you cannot
work.
Compete.
Yeah.
And if you're not a part of the competition, I can't talk to you. But Honda's had teams in the Rebel, I think since the beginning, but I know they put some Trail Sport models in last year that did very well.
To be clear, the Trail Sport, apart from wheels and tires, doesn't really give you a whole lot that's off-road.
Well, so I'm like, I've pulled up the description here. They use... distinctly unique, genuine Honda accessories. And so you've got some, like, underbody protection. So we're talking skid plates.
And is that stock?
Yes.
Or can you get skid plates?
I believe... I believe it's stock. The way this is written, it sounds
like
it's stock.
For people who don't know, skid plates actually line the bottom of the car and protect vital components from rocks and other nasty things.
Yeah, and it gets more of I think suspension tuning. And
does it? Okay, I was looking for that, and I didn't know if that happened or not. Okay.
Yeah, and then they have post-production, so like HPD packages, the performance.
Honda Performance Division,
So they have those packages that are available. They have 20-inch wheels available. But, you know, the idea is this is, off-road tuned suspension, trail-ready, all-terrain tires.
Okay, so you do get a retuned suspension.
Yeah, yeah.
Because the ground clearance is about 8 inches, which is, I think, for the entire lineup of of Passport products, which is pretty good.
Yeah.
It's not serious off-road, but it's better than, I think most cars come in around 7.
Yeah, and
most crossovers.
So we, so there's two, like if you look at the Rebel Rally, there's two classes you can compete in, and one is the 4x4 class, which is going to be like your Jeeps, your Broncos, those kinds of things. And then you have the X-Cross, which is going to be your Passport, and like I was driving the Hyundai Santa Cruz. So it can cover some pretty difficult terrain, and it does have some underbody protection, but it's not going to be like Rubicon trail worthy. It's not like going to be doing crazy off-road stuff.
So we should talk about the Passport in the Honda lineup. So it slots between the CR-V and the Pilot, both excellent vehicles.
Yeah.
But it's two-row, not three-row like the Pilot.
And Pilot and Passport are on the same platform.
Yeah, they're basically the same vehicle.
Yeah.
But the interesting thing about the Passport, I think, and it makes it look sporty, is it's very bobtail. Not a lot of rear overhang, which is good for off-roading.
Yeah.
Also, it's not nearly as popular as the Pilot. Last year, they only sold 40,000 of those versus 100,000 Pilots.
Yeah, but I mean, people who want the occasional third row, you know, they may never use the third row, but it's just kind of like a pickup truck. You may never tow, but you want to say you could if you needed to.
Also, this is interesting about the Passport. Only three trim levels, EXL, which is basically already luxury level, Trail Sport, and then something called the Black Edition, which is very expensive, $50,000. So Trail Sport is just it's like a $2,000 bump.
Yeah, because I want to say that
it's
like
pretty affordable.
They sent me like four different Monronis, and I was like, "Well, which one was the vehicle that I was driving?" So one, as tested, was $52,000, and that had the HPD package on it, and then the other was $46,000.
Did you write a review of this yet?
I've not.
I'd like to see that with the HPD package, because we had a Honda Ridgeline through here.
Mm-hmm.
You and I both drove it with the HPD package.
I didn't like the HPD package.
I loved it.
Wasn't
it red with bronze wheels?
It was
wheels?
Red with the bronze wheels, and to me it looked weird. It looked weird.
I'll grant you it was strange, and I liked it because it was strange.
No.
Like, I would own that.
No. But back to the Passport, Trail Sport. So I really, in general, liked the vehicle. I thought it had a great amount of cargo space. Drove it to Indianapolis. It was comfortable to drive on the highway. But here's the thing. There are two things that I did not like about this vehicle that would be deal breakers for me.
Wow.
Thing number one was the seats.
Mm-hmm.
They were not comfortable. I would say probably about 45 minutes into the drive, my butt hurt, and my husband, who was in the passenger seat, was unhappy.
His butt too?
His butt too, and he was like, and my back hurts, and this is uncomfortable, these
really?
Are so stiff, and he may have inserted a couple of expletives in there, but he was not happy. Neither of us liked
the seats. So I'm just asking, we're almost out of time here, was it the seats, or is the ride a little firmer in
the
vehicle?
No, it wasn't the ride.
It's the seats?
It was the seats. So that was thing number one, and thing number two, it has adaptive cruise control on it, which is, you know, the radar sensing speed modulated.
Wonderful option.
I love it.
It's often expensive, and it's totally worth it.
But it's often standard on vehicles as well. And so I love this feature, but here's the thing. On the Honda that I was driving, it turned off under 25 miles per hour.
Yeah.
And to me, like, that is really when you want it to be operating, when you're in stop-and-go traffic.
Well, that's the two different types of systems.
Yeah.
Because the Nissan system often doesn't extend to higher speeds.
So there are some that will shut off under, like, 25 miles per hour. There will some that will shut off over, like, 25 miles per hour. And then there are some that do the full range from zero up to, like, 100 miles per hour.
So you didn't like the seats. The moral here is test drive the vehicle.
Yeah, because I didn't like the seats. And then, again, I didn't like the way the adaptive cruise control operated. And living in Chicago, that would be a deal breaker for me.
The seats, though, just a problem on long drives.
Yeah, I mean, if you never drive longer than a half an hour, you will probably not find it problematic.
That's good to know. I like the vehicle. All right, give just a final summation. Liked it, didn't like it? Wonderful.
I felt very meh about it. Like, meh. I didn't not like it, but I didn't like it either.
I think I liked it more than you did.
You totally did.
All right. We talked to Robert Colangelo.
Yes.
Of the Green Sense show after this about the Aptera.
Yeah.
A vehicle most people don't know about that had a very strange history.
Yes.
All right. We're going to take a break. And when we come back, Robert Colangelo.
Questions or comments?
Drop us a line at carstuff@consumerguide.com.
That's carstuff@consumerguide.com. Welcome back to the Car Stuff Podcast.
All right, we're back. I'm Tom. She is Jill. This is the Car Stuff Podcast. Jill, help me real quick. Just ask me a question that I'm expecting.
What color is the sky?
Not what I was looking for.
Not, I know what you would like. Hey, Tom, are you on social media?
Jill, I am. Thanks for asking. I am Car Guy Tom on Twitter. A lot of new Car Spotter stuff. I got a question up there, too. Answer the question. What happened to vehicle subscriptions?
They're still there.
Are they?
Yeah.
Is anyone subscribing to cars?
You're not talking about in-car vehicle subscriptions.
No.
You're talking about car subscriptions.
Yeah, that Volvo kind of kicked off, and then Mercedes tried, and Cadillac tried, and Porsche tried. And the whole thing started really nice, right? Mm. You would subscribe to a car, not a car, but to a maker, and then you could get any car you wanted at any time. I think that proved to be prohibitively expensive to actually accommodate. And then subscriptions just came down to kind of like leases that included insurance.
Yeah, I feel like Hyundai might still be doing something like that where it because they want you to test their electric vehicles. And so, like, if you're down in Florida, like snowbirds, if you're down in Florida for, like, 3 or 4 months, you could,
that's a great idea.
You could have, like, a vehicle subscription to Hyundai down there. But then when you're up in Michigan or New York, you know, wherever you spend your summers, then you could have Santa Cruz, Santa Fe, whatever.
That is very situationally specific, but it's a good idea.
I feel like Hyundai might still be doing it, but you know what? TBH, as the kids say, I'm not entirely sure if anybody is still really doing that or is supporting it.
Yeah, I don't know. It was a weird idea, and I think its time has come and gone.
Yeah.
All right. Aptera.
Yes.
Aptera. Do you remember the name Aptera?
No, I do not.
When I first started at Consumer Guide, Aptera was,
20 years ago?
Yeah, a long time ago.
Yes.
Aptera was building some vehicles or trying to build some vehicles. And I think the breakthrough technology at the time was hybrid. Mm. But now they're more than hybrid. They're back. They're building cars again, or hopefully they're building cars again. They're not just hybrid. They are electric and they are solar, which is very interesting.
Cars, kind of.
Yes.
Cars not like you would think.
So our good friend Robert Colangelo, who has a lot of initiative, actually drove there to test drive the Aptera.
Drove where?
Carlsbad, California.
Wow.
To Aptera.
Okay.
So Robert Colangelo, he is the founder of SIA Technologies and the host of the Green Sense Show. Robert, how are you?
Tom, so nice to talk to you.
It is good to talk to you, and it's good to talk to you about cars, one of my favorite topics. But you took some serious initiative, and you went and actually visited the folks at Aptera. For people who don't know, tell us about Aptera, because they've had a strange history.
Yes. I met with Chris Anthony, co-founder and co-CEO of Aptera Motors, at their Carlsbad, California office in February. They were very generous. They allowed me to tour the facility and test drive several prototypes. Chris is a very charismatic, seasoned entrepreneur. He's got 8 startups under his belt, a degree in finance, and a passion for environmental engineering. His philosophy is the best way he can make the world more sustainable is by making a lot of money to invest in new technology. And I thought that was very unique and sincere. He was a real fun guy to talk to. Aptera manufactures a futuristic-looking solar electric vehicle. They claim it could get up to 1,000 miles per charge through its efficient engineering. It has a 0.13 drag coefficient, weighing around 2,000 pounds. And as Joe was saying, the vehicle's classified as a motorcycle, but it's somewhere between a motorcycle and a car. It's a two-seater. It's shaped like a dolphin. It has butterfly doors.
That's a good description.
It's hard to describe. You have to look at it, and it's that dolphin shape that gives it that low drag coefficient. They really studied it and looked at biomimicry on how to make this thing really efficient as it cut through the air. It has three wheels, each with a motor, generating a total of 120 horsepower, allowing it to go 0 to 60 in 4 seconds with a top speed of 100 miles per hour. And you can listen to my interview with Chris on our greensenseshow.com. One thing I want to add, it was a beautiful sunny day the day I went out there to visit the plant. And I didn't drive out there. I actually flew out there. And I was supposed to go test drive the canoe up in Torrance, California, the next day. If you recall, in February, California had those terrible rains.
Yeah.
And the roads were so bad that I couldn't drive up to Torrance, which was about 60 miles away. And so I only got to test drive the Aptera, and I was glad it was a sunny day.
I've been trying to get someone from Canoe on the show for a long time, just a sidebar here, but they make fantastic looking vehicles. The designs are incredible, and I wish them well. And Canoe was recently bailed out, I think, by an order for trucks from Walmart, of all companies. So we'll see how they do.
Yes, and so we're going to reschedule a plant tour and a test drive. And they suggested that this time I meet them out in Oklahoma, where their manufacturing facility is. So
okay.
Hopefully there won't be rain, maybe winds, but who knows.
So, Robert, you actually drove an Aptera. You're one of the few people to do that. Tell us about the driving experience.
So I drove two different prototypes, and it was very interesting because I could see the action and the incremental progress that they made in each of the prototypes.
Interesting.
Now, I didn't verify anything. I just took it based on face value. But they claim that they should be into a production mode by the end of the year and having the first vehicle roll off the line somewhere in December or January of 25. As you mentioned earlier, Aptera had a rough start. The company went bankrupt and had to close due to financial problems in 2011. And then Steve Falbo and Chris Anthony, the co-founders, they reacquired the company in 2019. They launched a successful crowdfunding campaign, raised additional capital, I think somewhere around $100 million. I don't know exactly. I think that's what Chris told me. And they secured 40,000-plus orders. And next thing you know, they were back in business. Chris is really a charismatic co-founder and co-CEO. He's a seasoned entrepreneur. 8 startups under his belt. Their Carlsbad facility is a new facility. I toured the facility, test drove the prototypes, and I also learned that Sandy Monroe, who's, I guess, the lean manufacturing guru, is also an investor in the company.
Interesting.
And a consultant. Yeah, he's a consultant. He designed the sustainable manufacturing process from the inception. And this part I thought was really cool. It's rare to get a glimpse at a facility that's in that startup mode. And what Chris said, that Sandy was very happy to be working on a facility at the startup phase, that he usually comes into a facility once it's already established and tries to make it more sustainable. Tom, for your listeners, do you want to maybe explain who Sandy is?
Yeah, Sandy Monroe is an industry analyst and an engineer, and he's most famous, I think, to most car people, especially people in the media, for his early analysis of Tesla products. And he was one of the first guys to realize that Tesla was probably going to make it, because there have been some incredible innovations in the manufacturing of Tesla products, including extremely uncomplicated and lightweight wiring harnesses and other manufacturing things that Tesla did differently from other makers that were helping them to cut the cost. And and Sandy Monroe was one of the guys who was able to point these things out very early. And I think one of the most interesting things, too, is that the Tesla wiring harness, and the wiring harness on a car is extraordinarily complicated and heavy and includes literally thousands of miles of wire, has been seriously simplified by Tesla. And that's the kind of thing, that's the kind of long-term manufacturing thing you can do to cut costs over the time. But yeah, Sandy Monroe, well-known to people in the industry.
And I guess he worked under Deming, who really changed the auto industry. They laughed him out of Detroit. He went to Japan, and he's the one that really focused on making Japanese cars much more quality-oriented. And so as we walked through the manufacturing facility, what Chris shared with me was that their number one thing was to design an efficient, low-cost vehicle. And some of the things that they deployed in their manufacturing process was to design systems so that they were easy to sub out to the vendors so that you could just assemble the car. The best thing that they can do is have a limited amount of parts. And in their philosophy, or Sandy's, the best engineered part is no part, and to make the vehicle very simple. And where possible, if there is a part, they wanted to make sure it had multiple uses so that, again, it just keeps it a simple design. To me, one of the most fascinating things, and I heard this from Tesla also, was that they eliminated paint on the car. And
yeah.
They said that saved somewhere between 40 to 50% of their CapEx.
That is astonishing.
In their facility, and it reduced a tremendous amount of emissions. It decreased the production time, and it increased the flexibility of making the car because they designed a special wrap that was self-healing. And you apply that film. It's easy to change the color later on. If you get a cut or a nick on it, the sun will heal it, or you could take a hot air dryer, hair dryer to do that. I thought that was fascinating. I heard Tesla cut 2 days off the production time of the Cybertruck by not having to paint it. Any thoughts on that, Tom?
No, the color thing is super interesting, actually. And I know Tesla, I mean, that was one of their primary goals with the Cybertruck. I think calling it stainless steel is good marketing, I guess, in some corners. But the fact that it's a single finish that does not need to be painted, as you noted, they don't have to build a paint shop.
Well, and the other thing
with
that is there are emissions that are involved with paint that they are completely cutting out of the equation. And, that's also fascinating.
And being in California, probably the most regulated state, anything that you can do to reduce emissions is also good for the environment, but it's good for business too.
Robert, one of the things we haven't touched on yet was the fact that the Aptera makes pretty significant use of solar power to charge the vehicle. Talk a little bit about that.
So I looked at how they manufactured these solar panels because they're not flat. They curve to the form of this dolphin-shaped vehicle, and they go from the nose of the vehicle to the trunk. And in my opinion, these cars are really suited for sunny environments, Florida, California, Nevada, Arizona. You know, when you get into the Midwest where it's cold and we don't get as much sunlight, I don't know if they're that efficient. They're claiming that on a perfect day with the right angle of the sun and being fully illuminated, you can get about 40 miles of charge through their highly efficient solar panels. Again, I didn't verify any of this. This is what these are the claims they're making in their specifications.
That's an impressive number, though.
Yes, if you have a short commute, 10, 15 miles a day, you'll never have to charge that car. So, for example, say you drive that to the train station, a couple miles from home every day. You would never have to put fuel in that or plug it in.
That was one of the things, too, I learned from the interview, was that they're not suggesting overly that you have to get a level 2 charger at home. The battery is small enough that you can get by with just wall outlet charging.
Yes. They said, again, I didn't verify this, but they claim that you can charge that overnight on a 110 outlet and get somewhere around 150 miles to the charge, which is very efficient. Because I know when I test drove the F-150 electric pickup truck, by Ford. It took me 27 hours with my garage outlet to charge that thing, and it still wasn't fully charged. So I thought that was actually another cost savings and a great feature.
There's a lot of positive energy surrounding this, and I enjoyed your interview very much. But there are a couple of limiting factors to the potential success of this vehicle. One is that it's a two-seater, and the other that it registers as a motorcycle, which is going to limit its appeal in a number of states. What do you know about that?
Let me answer it this way. The price range of this vehicle is from $26,000 to $44,000, fully loaded with the bigger battery getting 1,000 miles, you know, the full sun charge solar panel system. I think there's pros and cons for it being this sort of hybrid motorcycle vehicle. One, and I was astounded by this, I asked the question about insurance. And he said, since it's a motorcycle, it's half the price of a car.
That's good
which
news.
Which is a factor for some EVs. The second thing is service. You know, one of the things I was concerned about with their only factory now being in California, if you buy one of these in Florida, how will it be serviced?
Mm.
And we did a story on the Green Sense show about John Deere tractors. They're making these EV tractors, but there is a big fight about letting the farmers fit their own tractors, and John Deere tried to block that. Well, they're a right-to-repair company, so they want people to be able to repair these, and they built these cars super simple. Each of the wheels has a motor, so there's no drivetrain, and there's not a lot of moving parts on this.
Interesting.
And so they're promoting, good customer support where they can guide you through your repairs, or they'd send out a mobile truck to repair these on site. So the service, the insurance, I think they've got a good plan in place for that. And the safety, you know, I was a little skeptical at first. Whenever you see something in a photo or in a video, and especially something this futuristic, it's hard to get a feel for it. But this is made of a composite carbon fiber, and they claim that the safety of this is very high, that they've done some crash tests. It had the best crush-proof roof of any vehicle, which is quite amazing. And they've done some crumple and side tests, and they're going to do some additional tests in the future to talk about its safety rating. So I thought those were some of the cool things and some of the great engineering that they did into it. Some of the fun things with the car that I liked were the butterfly doors. And the way you get into the car is there's a circle right on the driver and the passenger side, and you knock on it. And two knocks opens the
butterfly
door.
Knock, knock, who's there?
Knock, knock, who's there?
Right.
And you have to have your fob in your pocket, of course. The other thing was that they found a skateboard shop that recycled skateboards, and that's what your pedals are. One is positive for the accelerator, and one is negative for the brake. I thought
that's
that was
fun.
A cool little touch. And also, what Chris liked best about the car was the rear suspension. They've designed it so it rides like a four-wheel car. It has a rear-link suspension, so the wheel is really highly engineered to move up and down with the front wheels so you don't get independent movement between the front and the back.
Interesting.
As I said, there's very few parts. There's no drivetrain. Let's see. I think that, the trunk space was probably the most remarkable. This thing is huge. And the way this vehicle is shaped, you could easily lay in the back, and they have a camping feature with a pop-up tent.
I saw that.
So if you wanted to do a cross-country drive, you could actually sleep in the back.
That's very cool. Jill, you had a question before we go?
Yeah, you know, I mean, you kind of touched on it a little bit, but I wanted to go back to the safety a little bit because this is not going to be classified as a car. It's classified as a motorcycle. So I'm assuming that means like it wouldn't be subject to the same crash test regulations that a car would be subjected to. But what I heard you saying is that it's probably as safe as a car? Question mark?
Again, I think that's a great question, Jill. I didn't verify this. They're claiming, or their intent is to make this comply with car crash test safety standards and make it that safe, even though they're not required to because it's considered a motorcycle.
Got it.
They claim that I don't know enough about this. Maybe you two do. Is carbon fiber that protective and safe?
Carbon fiber seriously ranges at its mm-hmm. strength, and it can be extremely durable and strong.
Yep.
So one of the things they showed me is, I don't know if you remember ever driving one of the first Tesla Roadsters, it was on a Lotus body where you actually had a step in, and it was sort of in a well.
Uh-huh.
This is sort of shaped like that. So they've designed that so it protects your hip in a side crash. It's got a lot of structural support there. And the front is quite long, so it has a good crumple zone. And, of course, the back is extremely long. So it looked really safe. I was a little skeptical at first. They've claimed – and this thing is so highly engineered. And one of the questions I asked them is, you have, 40,000-plus pre-orders. What does your customer pool look like? And they said that broke down into four categories. One were mechanical engineers and pilots who wanted cutting-edge engineering okay. and technology. And so that was the one thing I really wanted to stress that surprised me, is how cool and high-tech and how thoughtful the engineering is, and how thoughtful the manufacture of these cars, the process is, so that it's clean and sustainable. The second group was cost cutters, okay. looking for inexpensive transportation. Third were environmentalists that were looking to buy a vehicle that was better for the planet with lower emissions. And then the fourth, and they said this was their biggest group, were people that wanted that wow factor. They wanted a spaceship-looking vehicle in their driveway to impress their neighbors.
It's a crazy-looking vehicle, so I totally see that. Robert, we've run out of time, but tell us how we can listen to the podcast.
If you just listen to greensenseshow.com and look for the interview with Chris Anthony at Aptera. And, Tom, it's a little awkward. I'm always on the other side interviewing you, but... thank you so much for the opportunity, and I hope to be back to talk about the canoe in the future.
I'm looking forward to that. He's Robert Colangelo. He is the founder of SIA Technologies and the host of the Green Sense Show. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, it's quiz time.
Questions or comments?
Drop us a line at carstuff@consumerguide.com.
That's carstuff@consumerguide.com.
This is TalkZone.com.
Holy snakey!
Welcome back to the Car Stuff Podcast.
All right, we're back. This is the Car Stuff Podcast. I'm Tom, she's Jill, and it's quiz time.
It is. And I have to say, like, right before we came in off of commercial, it said, holy snakey! And I'm like, I say that. But I'm trying not to say something worse.
Yeah. I almost swore earlier today. I was recording the Nick DiGilio podcast. I visit with Nick once a month, and he swears on his podcast.
Okay.
But I don't want to do that because I don't want to start accidentally swearing.
Getting into the habit of...
Yeah, yeah. When there's a microphone in front of me.
Yeah, no,
That would be bad.
I feel you.
Before we get to the quiz, social media?
Yes, I do that.
You do that. Okay.
I do that. So TikTok, Instagram, post, threads... LinkedIn, all the places.
Hashtag Jill Goes Bonkers.
No, hashtag Car Du Jour. But also Jill Simonello. It's just my name. I tried to make it easy, although Simonello is probably not easy to spell, but I'm the only me.
There you go.
Yep.
So on the quiz thing, you had a couple of brilliant weeks, and then you had two bad weeks.
One bad
week, and last week you barely won.
Well, last week was just kind of an ish week, yeah.
Okay, so we're back now. Fresh start for you. You can start a new win. Well, okay. You have a winning streak.
I do.
You have a winning streak of one.
Yes. And I will point out, I cannot stall a lot this week.
No. We went a little long with Robert.
But with a great conversation. So.
Oh, yeah. No complaints.
So, but I just can't stall.
He's Robert. Great guy. People want to listen to his podcast.
Yes. The one on Aptera was fascinating.
That was a good interview.
Yes.
Today's topic is 5-speed, 6-speed, or 7-speed.
Okay.
You're an advocate for manual transmissions.
I am.
I'm going to give you a vehicle. Each vehicle is available with a manual transmission.
Okay.
You just have to tell me if it's a 5-speed, a 6-speed, or a 7-speed.
Okay.
And there are people out there going, what, a 7-speed? But yes, there are a couple. Are you ready?
Okay.
I have other notes on here. I don't know what they are.
Okay.
That's very weird. ready?
Yeah.
Nissan Versa.
Okay.
5-speed, 6-speed, or 7-speed? Manual transmission. Still available with a manual.
Yeah. That's been 6 years, I think, since I've driven that. And I think I have one coming. I'm going to say 5-speed.
You are correct. You're on the board.
Woo! You don't get your favorite phrase.
Nope. You have a point.
I do have a point.
The Porsche 718 Boxster. 5-speed, 6-speed, or 7-speed?
You know, I have never seen a 7-speed, but I think if a vehicle were going to have it, it would be that one.
You going 7-speed?
Yeah.
No, 6-speed. Womp, womp, womp.
Yeah.
Porsche 911 Carrera S.
That's another one that would have that. You'd probably just trip me up. I'm going to say 6.
No, that's a 7.
Scratch that, reverse it. All right.
Okay, yeah. All of a sudden, it's desperate.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you got 3 to go, and you need 2. The Mazda 3. Mazda's sporty little compact sedan and hatchback.
Yes, and I feel...
Delightful car.
It is delightful. The manual transmission on that is also delightful.
It is. It's really good. Historically, Mazda has always built really nice manuals. My Ford Ranger, I had a 1991 Ford Ranger that came with a Mazda-supplied 5-speed manual.
Yeah, that's good. I feel like Mazda doesn't offer the manual transmission in the hatchback anymore, maybe?
I didn't check that hard.
The sedan. At any rate, I think it's a 6-speed.
It is a 6-speed.
Okay.
All right, you have 2 points. With 2 opportunities, you got 1 more point. The last one.
2 opportunities to fail.
The Jetta, the Volkswagen Jetta. Manual pairs with a 1.5-liter turbocharged 4-cylinder engine. Is it a 5-speed, 6-speed, or 7-speed?
I feel like it should be. I could be wrong. I feel like it should be a 6-speed.
Is that your final answer?
Yes.
You've already won.
Woo! You always make me second guess when you're like, is that your final answer? But I think that's your point.
All right. Ready? Arby's.
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 Did you know that? That's the meat.
Yeah. Arby's, they say meats, which really infuriates me. It's just bad grammar. Arby's is in Mexico.
Okay.
I didn't know that.
Okay.
Mexico is they have such good food down there. Why would they need Arby's?
Fair. We have such good food up here. Why do we need Taco Bell?
But compare, why is there Taco Bell in Mexico? That's the real question.
Oh, that would in fact be, is there?
Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah, it's weird.
Okay, that is weird.
I bet there's a lot of them right in Tijuana, just over the border.
Okay.
Anyway.
Now I want
Arby's.
Tacos.
Arby's
okay.
In Mexico.
Uh-huh.
I've got the menu. I checked the menu today. This is Arby's.mx, so we know it's true.
Okay, it's got to be true.
Yeah, there aren't a lot of Arby's in Mexico, by the way.
Okay.
They've only got like 150 international locations.
Okay.
But I need you to tell me which of the following is not an Arby's in Mexico menu item.
Okay.
Are you ready?
Mm-hmm.
Cerveza Modelo.
Okay.
The triple cheese turkey BLT stack. The roast beef gyro. Or the lemon glazed roast beef tacos. I can't read my writing. Lemon glazed roast beef tacos.
I'm guessing the cerveza is on the menu.
All right.
Because I feel like...
If you're at Arby's, you need to drink.
Yeah. Well, no, I just feel like
They used to have the potato cakes. Did you ever have those?
I don't know if I did.
Best thing on their menu, and they got rid of them. But their curly fries are, I guess, good.
Yeah, I don't do a lot of fast food. I feel like outside of the United States, they usually put alcohol in fast food menus.
They do.
We do have the very rare, like, Taco Bell cantinas in the United States that have alcohol in them.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, weird.
Okay, so you said cerveza, and then there was, like, some triple stack BLT thing.
Yep, so we have the Modelo beer, the triple cheese turkey BLT stack, the roast beef gyros. I wrote gyro, but it's gyros. And then the lemon glazed roast beef tacos.
So I think it's either going to be the lemon glazed tacos or the triple stack thing. Because, mm-hmm. I mean, roast beef gyros sounds like that's a thing. Lemon glazed to me is weird. I'm going to say that.
That's more of a Portugal thing.
I don't know.
Than a Mexico thing. Anyway, you're correct. No lemon glazed roast beef tacos. So you got 4 out of 6. Very nice. The quiz today is handwritten. It's kind of a mess.
It is a mess. Okay, so to recap, the only one with the 7-speed transmission was?
The Porsche 911.
Yes.
Also offered in the Corvette. There's a 7-speed manual.
The Corvette doesn't have, the new mid-engine doesn't have.
Oh, it was the old Corvette.
Yeah, I'm like, the new mid-engine does not have a manual.
I didn't include the Corvette, so I didn't go and recheck. You're right. Yeah, it's automatic only.
Like, wait.
Everything's automatic only.
Yeah.
I kind of forgot that Subaru is now automatic only.
Yeah. You know, I did a TikTok the other day about, so my husband and I, like, we have a GTI manual transmission, love the GTI. Probably still have a couple more years with the GTI, but I'm really campaigning for the Toyota GR Corolla as a replacement, and had it a couple months ago as a test vehicle and got special dispensation for him to drive it. So I did a YouTube video where I got his impressions of it and, you know, talked about that vehicle and put it on, like, I put an excerpt from the video onto TikTok, and somebody, I'm going back to Subaru, somebody was like, are these, you know, is the GR Corolla your only consideration, or would you consider the Subaru WRX? And I said, can't consider this. I said, we would consider a used WRX, but we can't look at it new anymore because no manual transmission. And they were like, I like broke their world.
What does Subaru call its automatic now? Is it the sport automatic or the they've got some euphemism for it, but
yeah,
it's a CVT automatic.
Yeah,
it's very good.
It's very good in the WRX.
No, all manuals are gone.
I know.
There's only a few versions of the Jetta that still have it. As I mentioned, no Subarus anymore.
The BRZ, I think, still has a manual.
Yeah, well,
but that's it.
That's more of
a Toyota, but yeah,
those don't sell in any volume.
Yeah, but no, I mean, it was very sad. And so when somebody asked me that and I broke their world, I felt very bad. So,
yeah.
Sad trombone
it is
for
sad.
WRX.
The manual transmission thing to me isn't as sad as it is for some other people. I grew up with it. Every car I owned for a long time was a manual.
Right.
But a lot of the manuals I drove recently weren't good.
Yeah.
Ford was selling a version of the Fiesta in the U.S. for a while with a 3-cylinder EcoBoost engine.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't fun to drive.
Yeah.
It was just like weird emission things going on. The engine didn't like to rev towards red line. So it wasn't, it was stick.
Yeah, but the Ford Focus RS, that was fun.
That was, yeah. And the Fiesta ST was fun.
Yeah.
But ultimately, yeah, stick doesn't work. And stick doesn't work with things like adaptive cruise control.
No, it does not.
So you can't do it that. It's not good for emissions. It's not going to work with any sort of...
it's not as fuel efficient anymore. As like once upon a time, the manual transmission used to be the fuel sipper. Not anymore.
It is huge how much of a difference that makes in the Versa, the Nissan Versa.
Mm-hmm.
I think the combined EPA rating for the Versa with the CVT, the continuously variable transmission, is 35. With the 5-speed manual, it's 30.
Yeah.
You take a serious hit.
Yeah.
So what a bummer. You got anything else going on?
Other than I'm heading out tomorrow to drive the new Lincoln Nautilus, so we'll be able to talk about that in a couple of weeks. That's the midsize SUV that has the big screen that, like, the new...
Yeah.
We saw that at the Midwest Automotive Media Association,
good.
And it has the big screen that, like, with it, that goes all the way across the dash.
Because that vehicle is assembled in China,
mm-hmm.
it is subject to the very high... import tariff to bring mm-hmm. a vehicle into the U.S. and thus they have nudged the vehicle up market.
Yeah.
So this is a much more luxurious vehicle, in part to cover that additional cost. But it looks fantastic.
It really does, and I'm going to be very curious to see how those screens operate, how distracting they are, and follow me on TikTok this week because I'm sure I will be posting about that.
Well, shoot us whatever tweets you like, and we'll get them onto the people should follow us on Facebook. The Car Stuff Podcast Facebook page. All right, that's a show.
Yes.
Nice job. Thank you for being here, Jill.
Yep.
Thank you to producer Randy and the good folks here at TalkZone. Big thanks to Robert Colangelo. Do check out his podcast. We'll link to that as well. And let's talk more about cars again.
Next week.
Next week.
remember to check us out at consumerguide.com.
The Car Stuff Podcast is produced by J-Turn Media.
To advertise on the show, please drop us a line at carstuff@consumerguide.com.